Let's get going with our first topic, which is something that I've been thinking about all week. As you recall, last Sunday, Kobe Bryant died tragically in a plane crash. The great basketball player, his daughter died, as did several other people in this helicopter crash. And what was interesting, I mean, you saw in the Super Bowl today, there was a memorial. They were having memorials at all different games. And you saw people just with an outpouring of sympathy, and they were crying and there were tears. And I wonder, why is it that we as people in a society mourn with such great feeling the loss of a celebrity? What is it about us? We don't know this guy. We've watched him. Maybe we think we know him. Maybe we've rooted for him, or maybe we admire him. But what is it about his tragic death truly goes right to the heart of our emotions? And with us to talk about that fascinating topic is Dr. Patty Ashley. Dr. Ashley is an international workshop presenter, an author, and a speaker. She's a psychotherapist who's going to give us some insight into the identification of why we feel so strongly about these issues. Dr. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me. How are you tonight?
Oh, hi, Karen. I'm great. How are you? Thanks.
Good.
So much for having me.
Good to have you here. So let's just talk a little bit. We're going to go to a break in just a little bit, but I want to get just your insight instinctively. Is this an uncommon thing to see people getting emotional about the death of a celebrity? And if it isn't, why do we do it?
No, it's really common. It's archetypal. We feel something in our bones that triggers us. It feels like it's something we know, but we really don't know. So, you know, our hearts open. There's empathy, you know, and we really want to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense, especially a tragic sudden loss like we saw with Kobe Bryant.
Are there certain celebrities that seem to evoke that kind of feeling more than others?
I think so. You know, and I think it really depends on the person, because everybody has a certain character that they're drawn to. Princess Diana, for instance, she, you know, that mourning went on forever, the flowers and the letters and and she did so much work, you know, in the world, but it was also such a royal family kind of situation that just stirred up big questions in our lives. And so I think it really depends on, you know, the individual, how much they're going to be touched by the person who dies. Like for me, my favorite singer-songwriter was Dan Fogelberg.
Oh.
I mourned that for a long time.
Yeah, well, and he's actually from Illinois. I forgot what town. It's not Peoria, is it?
Yeah.
Or it's somewhere downstate. And he died so tragically young of a prostate cancer, I believe. And I don't know about you, but when I hear his songs, which are so beautiful, I can't help but feel sad, because his life was cut so very short, and I would have loved to hear him now, you know, in his older years doing other ballads and other songs.
Right, and so that's a personal connection for you, the music, as it is for me. So I'm going to mourn that a little bit more. So a big sports fan, for instance, with Kobe Bryant, you know, when their whole world is around sports and what that's about, and they get excited, and then, you know, something tragic like that happens, I think they probably have a similar feeling, like, whoa, I wanted to know what else he was going to do in his life, and it was so sudden. It could happen to me.
Right, right. Let's open the phone lines. If anybody has felt something like this, where you just you obviously don't know the person, you've heard about it in the news, is there somebody who's really kind of just tugged at your heart, a death that you kind of surprised yourself? When we come back, I am going to talk a little bit about someone who kind of touched me, and I still look back and think, how was it that I felt so strongly about the death of somebody who I didn't know? 981-7200, 312-987-200. And we're talking with Dr. Patty Ashley, and we're talking about grief, too. We're going to morph into another topic, which is very important to talk about, and which is dealing with grief, dealing with the loss of loved ones, and how maybe some tips to make you feel a little bit better. You're listening to WGN. This is the Karen Conti Show. We are talking about the loss of a celebrity, and in light of the death of Kobe Bryant last Sunday. And with us is Dr. Patty Ashley, who is a psychotherapist who deals with all kinds of issues regarding wellness and grief. And she's written books, and she's here to weigh in a little bit on this topic. Are you still with us, Dr. Ashley?
I am.
Okay. Well, I had a texter who said Tom Petty. He said she apparently Tom Petty, and it confused me why I felt this way. And I said, can you guess why? And the texter said, I don't know. I guess it's part of my life. I mean, it's almost inexplicable. Is it different if somebody dies, if it's a celebrity dies of old age versus some kind of sudden death? Do you see a difference in how people react?
I think there's a slight difference, but there's still a sadness. There's still a grief. I would ask the texter about, you know, how he is like Tom Petty himself, you know, what qualities in Tom Petty are in him. And then, you know, then we grieve the loss of almost a part of ourselves in that respect.
So that might be part of it. So I'm going to share John F. Kennedy Jr. I met John F. Kennedy Jr. for a brief nanosecond at a party in Chicago at the Art Institute. He was walking across. It was to celebrate his magazine, George. I was at the party. He walked right in front of me. He shook his hand, shook my hand, and said, I'm John Kennedy. And I'm like, yeah. And it wasn't much longer after that he died tragically and also in a plane crash. And I took it so hard. Now, I did have that brief moment that I met him, but I'm trying to figure it out. And I thought to myself, he was such a young, beautiful, vibrant man, and he would have been so much fun to watch. You know, he had political aspirations. Maybe he was enjoying his life. You saw him with his shirt off, you know, running around Central Park. He had gotten married. It was just something where I felt like I was robbed of the experience of watching him grow up. Is there anything else that you could add to that, Dr. Ashley, that would make any sense as to why perhaps his death affected me that way?
Well, if it were me, I would ask myself again, what part of him is in me? What is it in me that I don't want to let go of? I want to continue on. What did I see in this person that I really admire? And that's a part of you. And the good news is those of us that are left can be the legacy. You know, we can, you know, be what it is in the world that these people we look up to stood for, because when they're gone, they're no longer here. And it's hard to watch, especially, you know, when they're young, watch someone like that have to leave us.
Right. And it's almost as if they're frozen in time. They're never going to age. Mm-hmm. You know, we're never going to see him old. And, you know, you think of the Marilyn Monroes and all of those people. No, we never saw them go into their older years. And in some way, there's a preservation of their image as, you know, kind of in the prime of their lives, if you will. Let's talk a little bit. Let's move topics just a little bit when it comes to grief. You have spoken about post-traumatic stress reactions to mass shootings. Can you tell our listeners how you believe all of these shootings we're having? I mean, there was terrorist activity in London today with some stabbings, but I mean, these mass shootings that we've had all over our country almost on a weekly basis, how does this affect us?
Wow. Yeah, it's so important for us not to become numb to this, and that's what breaks my heart the most, I think, is, you know, we feel so helpless, right? And we go, I can't do anything about it, and there's another one. And we almost kind of numb out our grief somewhat, but grief deepens us. And so, I mean, it's tragic. It is horrendous what's happening, you know, with the amount of people that are getting killed in these mass shootings and that sort of thing. So whatever we can do, you know, I love Mr. Rogers saying, you know, look for the helpers. Whatever we can do to help, whatever we can do, that brings the compassion. It doesn't bring it, you know, it brings it more to the forefront, the compassion for each other. And I think we all have to come together in these times and support one another. And it's tragic because the amount of lives that are affected with those kinds of losses and just so seemingly unfair.
And you know, so there's, you know, maybe some high point to it in that we all are in this together and we feel it because we're all mourning a similar loss. And so maybe there's some togetherness here that is good for us. But it just seems to be so far outweighed by the fear and the distrust and mistrust of people. And I guess as an adult, you know, dealing with that is not easy, but it's certainly easier than when you're a child. And I don't know. Can you weigh in a little bit? I have this feeling that with all the school shootings that have been going on for now 30 years or so, 25, 30 years, again, a commonplace thing, so commonplace that schools have real life kind of drills with gunshots going off and real blood, you know, like fake blood being thrown. And how does this affect children on a long-term basis, or do we not know this?
Well, it's trauma. It's PTSD, the fake drills, the fear of going to school because, you know, I work with adolescents and they talk to me about that. You know, we have to, you know, they think about, you know, am I going to hide under the desk? What am I going to do? That is not the way children should be spending their day. That is not healthy development. And Karen, that's why I do what I do, because I feel like we don't address really the prevention issues. We're trying to fix problems all the time. We're slapping Band-Aids on things, right? And we're not really looking at what's in the deeper heart of our children. And what's in the heart of our children is this, it's an unbelievable disconnect. You know, we have so much to learn about what children need because we've just researched it in the last century, right? And we have so much to fix and undo and change, but there's so much of the old tapes in our unconscious, in our DNA, you know, do as I say, not as I say, stop being crying before I give you something to cry about. You should be ashamed of yourself. Don't be angry, la, la, la. And kids don't know how to deal with emotions, and adults don't either. So we need to have bigger conversations about what these kids are feeling, because, you know, they got to be pretty angry to be shooting people in the streets and in the schools, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, and it's not just one of them.
Right.
We're here with Dr. Patty Ashley, who's a psychotherapist, and we're talking about death, and we're talking about how certain public executions, certain crimes are affecting people. And I do some family law work, Dr. Ashley, and I do hear my clients talk about their children who are afraid to go to school and who are so anxious that they literally can't go to school and they're medicated. And what, you know, first of all, what advice would you give to the schools? Should they be doing these school drills? Is this something that makes sense? I mean, maybe if it happens, it would help to save a few people. But is there some better way to handle this than real life drills?
Well, I was a special education teacher once, and my daughter's a school psychologist, and my other daughter is a high school teacher. And I have to say, the bigger problem is systemic. We need at least twice as many teachers in the school, first of all, so that kids feel connected. And of course, that's not going to happen right now anytime soon. But that, to me, is a piece of the bigger problem. And then we need to have conversations. We need to have these kids get together and talk about what's going on and what they're feeling more frequently than they do. I know the psychologists, like my daughter, is one of them, you know, goes in a crisis and does, you know, occasional groups. But we need so much more of the social emotional work in schools and with parents. And parents need to be educated. I did parent education for years for a pediatric group in Virginia, and there was shame around taking a parent education class. You know, when it's the most important job we can do, and we have so much to learn about what we know about how kids develop. I think those are the conversations that we're not having.
And we can't juxtapose our experiences. You know, I'm saying at my age, you know, we didn't have any of that stuff. I mean, we had a fire drill, or we had, you know, a tornado drill, and it was fun, and no one was worried about it, and it was just a way to get out of school for about 10 minutes. But, you know, with these kind of shootings, this is a whole different thing. This is a whole we can't say, well, just get over it or don't think about it. We do have to address it and make sure that the kids understand that this is real and that there's somebody listening to them and hearing what they're saying. Totally agree with you. Just a few minutes here left, and I know I have a lot of older listeners here, Dr. Ashley, who are mourning the loss of a spouse, of a friend, of parents. We all have lost somebody. Hardly any of us has not, you know, have not been through that. I know that everyone grieves in different ways, but what are some of the bullet points in how to help and how to move through it? Because you can't, you know, move away from it. You got to kind of just move through it. What are some of the things that you recommend in your therapy to people who are grieving?
Well, one of the key pieces I learned early on in my graduate work is you have to tell the story at least 100 times. And I think anyone who has an enlightened witness, someone who can sit with them and feel the grief with them, that's a true gift. So grief groups, therapists, any sort of supportive people you can talk to tell the story. I wrote my book, Letters to Freedom, after my partner died suddenly of a heart attack, the same way my father had died when I was a kid.
Oh, goodness.
And I had to sit down after he died and write stories on the computer because I just couldn't get our, you know, what had happened between us in our relationship and the sudden death out of my mind. And I didn't want to burden my friends too terribly much, even though they were sweet and wonderful and did listen. But I was really fortunate to have learned you got to tell the story 100 times. So that, you know, tell a story, give sorrow words, as William Shakespeare said.
And that's good advice to people who are helping others grieve. And interestingly, I lost my husband, and it was this month. Mm. And I also, today would be my wedding anniversary. And it was interesting because I had several friends reach out and just say, just thinking about you. They didn't even mention it. But the idea that they recognized that it might be a day that had a little sadness for me was so overwhelming. I mean, I just sat on my computer this morning and thought, they have it on their schedule to reach out and say something nice just because they... And I think that people don't always do that. They feel uncomfortable, but they should just do it, right?
Yes, and first let me say I'm so sorry for your loss. That's hard to walk through. Yes, and what a gift to have people connect with you. That's what we need. That's exactly what we need.
Dr. Ashley, I want to thank you, and I'm going to give out your contact information next half hour because we've got to run. But I want to thank you so much for joining us. Please join us again, and have a great Valentine's Day.
Oh, thank you, Karen, for having me.
All right. Dr. Patty Ashley, right. Thank you for joining me.